It is a game day. Dallas Cowboys, New York Giants tonight on this radio station pregame. Play-by-play, Brad Sham, Babe Laufenberg, who will join us at 8:40, and then the post. We have all the guests at 8 o'clock, 8:40, as I said, and 9:20 here on DFW Sports Station. I'm Sean Treif alongside RJ Choppy, Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. If you are just skipping around the radio, this is where you can listen to the game and then just keep it on throughout the night. And then tomorrow morning, get all the reaction with Star Up and Star Down with us. Before we actually pick this one, and I heard there's one or at least two people in the building that are actually going to pick the New York Giants to win what I'm calling a must-win game for Mike McCarthy. We're going to get into that at 7:20. RJ Choppy with some Dallas Cowboy concerns.
All right, so I want to preface this by saying I left out the running game and stopping the run because,
as Jerry says, we're all fine there.
Well, that's...
We like our positions. Yeah. We like our personnel.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So I left those out for that very reason. But a normal functioning adult would say, we know those are at DEFCON. Is it one or five? Whatever the worst
one is. One is the worst.
Yeah. So we know those are bad. So I want to go scale of one to five with these, right? Five, biggest concern. One is not really that much of concern at all. Okay. These are the lists. You guys rank them. Locker room leadership. I never thought I would ask a Dak Prescott-led team this question, but I think it's pertinent here.
Four.
Okay.
Four. Concern of four out of five.
Okay.
Dak is not enough, or he's not controlling them enough. One of the two.
So just to be clear, based on the way you set this up, you're saying five is the highest concern?
Yeah, five is of the
utmost
concern. Okay,
because you were talking about DEFCON
a
second ago.
Yeah, it's too confusing.
All right. So five being the highest concern. Three, probably, like right in the middle. Like, I think there's lack of leadership in certain areas. I think in other ways, there's just also very little cohesion, and there's also just a problem with subordinates, too. Like, I think that is part of the issue.
Subordinates.
Like, in terms of just when you talk about leadership and then the people they're leading, like, I think there's a lot of immaturity that exists within those players that you're trying to lead. And so how much that can be established overnight, especially while you're losing games, I don't know, but I'll put it at a three.
Name the top four leaders on this team.
Dak Prescott, DeMarcus Lawrence, Probably Jordan Lewis, and then Zach Martin, one of them.
Okay, four.
I think it's a four. 3.8, 4.2. It's right there because it's like I think part of the problem is that
they bicker,
they do,
they
bicker.
Hide,
uh-huh.
They run, they blame. They don't follow through with what they say in the offseason. They crumble during the games. They don't bounce back. They're not following instructions defensively, or at least, you know, everyone trying to play Superman according to Micah and Tank.
What? There's a lot of, and you know, even the thought of hero ball already. Week three, where you're playing for yourself. I mean, that's something you do when you're eliminated. That's a leadership from the top, and that's part of, in my opinion, what happens when you have a lame duck coach.
I agree. All those things are issues right now. So I guess I'm curious from you, Sean and RJ, what's your ideal breakdown of what you think coach responsibility or coach leadership versus player leadership should be? Is that 50-50 or should it be more player driven? Or like, how do you think leadership should look? Like should it come more from the coach or the
50-50,
players?
50-50, 60-40.
Okay.
Something like that. You know, someone's got to police the locker room. You know, when the coach is not there and not around. That's why we can make fun of your Bobby Wagners and those types of dudes, but you get a Bobby Wagner type, and I feel like you take care of a lot of that.
Because that locker room, that is not for the coaches to be in. Like that's you know what I mean? Like, that's the players. That's their domain. Someone's got to police it.
Yeah, so. I mean, that was why Rob Davis was here.
Wide receivers.
Who's that?
He was the old assistant coach that was McCarthy's locker room spy, essentially.
Wide receivers, next one.
Four. Concern of a four.
Yeah, probably. I mean, CD's so good, and I don't think he's going to have the same sort of issues that he has early. But, I mean, overall, the group, there's not enough consistency. So,
like,
four.
They've absolutely failed with the number three wideout.
Yeah, Tolbert is not the guy you thought he was going to be. Even if he ends up being a solid player or doesn't hurt you, he's not the guy they thought.
Yeah, I think it's a four and a half. They're not getting separation either. That to me is, yeah. I mean, yeah.
Like, why would you not just double team CeeDee Lamb?
Right. I mean, every wide receiver can catch in the NFL. They can all catch at some.
Except Aguilar.
At some level, they can all catch. Can they get open? And this group is not getting open right now. Either they're not getting schemed open, or they're not able to beat their man one on one. So to me, it's a big one.
Have you talked about your frustration that you know about with someone, or that's still off air?
Probably off air, because I don't know which particular frustration you're referencing, because I know there are a few of them.
All right.
Oh, I do know. Yeah, that's off air for now.
Okay.
But we'll work on it.
Rain, Dakota, Prescott.
My extreme answer would be a 3. I'd go 2.5. I'll go in between. 2.5.
Yeah. 2.5. Look, I mean, he's here. He's under contract. And I think there's a stability there that I'd be a little bit more concerned about if he was, you know, out of contract, because I would start tying it into, okay, are we seeing that he's cracking under pressure, or is there, you know, an issue of just not feeling secure and he's not focused? I think right now it's just they're sloppy, just like they were sloppy early on last year. So two and a half, three.
They are a little sloppy. I think it's a 2. I'm not really that worried about him yet. If it gets to week 5 or 6 and his QBR is in the high teens and his adjusted net yards per attempt are very, very low.
Now grade how he's played so far. A grade. I'll say
C plus. C.
Some type of C.
Just a C. Yeah.
He's been there.
C minus.
Yep.
And by the way, I don't know if you guys is, I don't like look at the contract and weight it on a curve.
What do you mean?
Like, some people are saying, like, you've got to get more than this for $60 million. Like, I don't care what his contract is. Once you're on the field, I don't care.
Yeah.
I care it from the perspective of, if you are a $60 million player, you need to be more consistent, like, with what you did at the end of the game the other day. I do care about that. I think that is just an expectation for somebody who gets that.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, I think it's an expectation for everybody in the NFL as a starting quarterback.
C at the most, C minus at the at the worst for me.
Pass coverage. They have forced 8 incompletions in the last 2 games.
I mean, I don't know how much they're even getting an opportunity, because people are just, they're running the ball down. I don't know what the secondary is right now, what they're able to do. So I'll say it's an incomplete, but a 2, because I don't know.
I'll say 3.5. Carson is a target.
Mm-hmm.
Diggs, I mean, look, it's unfair to hone in just on one play, but that's a lockdown corner opportunity and play what happened on 3rd and 6 the other day.
Yeah,
he wasn't even close.
Yeah,
no, he wasn't even close with the cushion that he was giving.
Is there any? Do you give any grace period for or pass for recovering from the injury?
I'm not thinking about that right now. I'm just thinking, like, right now, how worried am I about the secondary with this game going down tonight or who they play? So no.
I mean, Diggs was really good in week 1. I that play against Baltimore.
And then people started running the football.
No, yeah.
And he pulled out the Ole.
And he's an awful run defender. I will give Baltimore credit for just scheming that, because to me, that's the matchup you want, is Zay Flowers on Diggs. Zay Flowers is a very, like, laterally, like, type of player, and that's, Diggs is not quick enough to cover a route like that.
And who's going to have neighbors tonight?
They've played pretty much exclusively on sides, so if they move neighbors around, I think they can just pick their matchup.
Oof.
RJ's Dallas Cowboy concerns 1 through 5 before we pick it here on 105.3 The Fan.
I think it's a 3.5 on the pass coverage.
When are the reinforcements coming?
Bland could be back as early as Pittsburgh, I think. I mean, that'll be something we can ask Jerry about on Tuesday, I would guess. But, I mean, Pittsburgh would be the earliest you're maybe looking at.
And I immediately go down to, like, a 1.5 as soon as that happens.
Who plays first, Bland or Cook?
Oh, Dalvin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Have we gotten an answer on this yet?
He's ready.
He must not be good.
That's it. He must not be good.
He must be terrible behind the scenes.
Because Eatman made a good point. I think it was Eatman made a good point yesterday. Like, he's... on a short week, like, he's easily your most fresh player.
Yeah, this is the game to play him.
Yeah. Offensive line. Now, they are, I think, 10th in pass block win rate.
Yeah, these win rate things you sent the other day did not add up.
Was it? Well, you sent that one, right?
Or
you
said that we all talked about.
But we talked about that. They're like, at least after we talked, I'll go get the updated ones because they didn't update them until after the Monday night games.
It's a...
What was it? The gist of it was...
No, basically, so they get some of the time to throw and the pass block win rate stuff. They're in the top half of the league, but they're not.
But 7 of the top 10 win rate offensive lines had losing records. It was something like that.
Yeah, it was. It was like whatever the time to throw. They are in run block win rate 9th and 10th in pass block win rate.
That's the
win rate is starting to look as questionable as some of the PFF.
That's what it is. That's kind of what it is that it's like, I don't know that you can, the win rate stuff is all, it strips out all context outside of just, did you block them for this long? And so to me, it's on the concern level, it's a 3.5.
Yeah, I was going to say 3 or 3.5 with 5 being terrified.
The benefit is offensive lines tend to get better as the year goes along.
Are they better run or pass blocking right now?
That's the odd thing. It's like alternated each week. There's some weeks where they look much better run blocking than other weeks where it's pass blocking. I would say they're probably a better run blocking unit right now.
I believe the run block one, the pass block one, eh. The reason I believe the run block one is the Cowboys have such a below expectation yards per carry. Right? They've got like so many yards per carry below expectation. Like they should be getting more.
If you believe in that stat. If you believe in the way they do that. I mean, yeah, it's kind of all a domino effect.
Yeah.
Why would I believe, you know, that one, but not the win rate?
I mean, I believe in all the stats to some level. I mean, like they have some value to them. There's no stat that's going to have like everything covered. It's just not, that's not going to be.
I'll say 3.3 concern for the offensive line. Is that it?
I got one more. Physicality.
Five.
DEFCON.
You can, and that's one of the concerns that needs
what you're talking about.
That people need to be aware of tonight is they've gotten beat up 2 weeks in a row going into a short week. This isn't just short week. This is short week with physically abusive type of games that they've played the last couple weeks.
Who in this, and what's yours? Yours is 5?
Oh, it's a 5. Yeah, this is not a physical football team. When Jason Garrett calls you out for being soft, you are soft.
Who in this building, I think it's a must-win for McCarthy, who in this building is picking the New York Giants to actually embarrass the Cowboys tonight? We need your official picks. Y'all nailed it with the Ravens one. Let's see if you can do it again on the Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line at 877-881-1053. The commercial-free expressway with a Boys to Men ticket giveaway is next. All right, let's make the official predictions here on your home of the Cowboys pregame, play-by-play, postgame, all on this radio station for the New York Giants tonight. Paul Schwartz from New York at 8 o'clock. Babe Laufenberg, Cowboys color analyst at 8:40. Michael Silver, national football reporter at 9:20 on DFW Sports Station. This is the commercial-free expressway with a Boys to Men ticket giveaway. I want to repeat what I said in case Josh Clark and the web team are just waking up so I don't get misidentified or mislabeled with this take on social media when the fan account puts it out.
Misgendered.
I believe tonight is a must-win game for Mike McCarthy. Not that he gets fired tomorrow if they lose. Not that the Dallas Cowboys cannot make the playoffs if they lose. I don't believe McCarthy survives the season either after or within this stretch of games that takes place after this one if they drop this game to the Giants. The heat will be insane. It will get chaotic around here. It's already pretty crazy. It will be absolute chaos, and who knows how much this locker room folds up and turns on each other with the way the season has started. If the Cowboys lose tonight, Mike McCarthy, no chance. He is back here next year. I don't know if he survives the season with the stretch that they have coming up against the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Detroit Lions, the San Francisco 49ers, Atlanta, Philly, Houston, and whatever the Commanders are.
Yeah, like you're not saying...
They have to win.
Yeah, you're not saying like losing tonight, like Jerry will make the determination tonight. So you're just saying like that tells you, that gives you the foresight to say it's not going to work out here, basically, yes. Is what you're saying. Yeah, okay, I get you. I mean, I think that's pretty accurate because there's...
Pretty dramatic there, Nick.
This is the opportunity to like bounce back. Last week was an opportunity to bounce back. You absolutely did not. All the talk, all the frustration, all the irritation that exists with coaches, players, everybody else, if you come out flat and have issues again tonight, that's going to say something significant about where your team is. And I think it's going to just kind of push what is a teetering point right now. It's going to push it into a really bad place for them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... It's a must-win from the standpoint that 1-3 is going to be very difficult to make the postseason regardless. But if they do... I won't say Mike's gone because if they make the NFC Championship game even at 9-8, I think he sticks around.
There's a big difference between sticking around though and like getting an extension. I'm just saying that's a much bigger leap. I think a higher bar for Jerry.
Well, this is the end of his contract. Like if I say stick around, I mean that means he's getting an extension. And I think he would if he gets to the NFC Championship game. I think he would. I don't care. They could go 7-10, win the division. And I think he would. And that would be the wrong decision, in my opinion. I'd rather go 12-5. I mean, to me, a better season is 12-5 again than 7-10 and having a lucky two games in the playoffs to make the NFC Championship game. That's not worthy of an extension, in my opinion.
Well, but it would be to me, depending on how you won your two playoff games versus the four built-in gimme wins that they usually get over the Giants in Washington. So, like, you know... Four of your 11 wins are usually cake, taking advantage of this joke of a division, which brings us to tonight.
Sometimes it's five of the 11 or 12 wins, right? Sometimes it's five of those games because a lot of times they do go 5-1 in this division. But yeah, so I don't know if it's a must win, but boy, I'll tell you, you don't beat this team, you got a lot of you got a lot of problems within this organization from how this team was built. Did they make the right decisions that they were going to have to ask themselves? I mean, the Rangers are asking themselves questions after last year. What kind of in the middle of the season was that a fluke? You know, what the hell questions are the Cowboys going to be asking?
What are the five things on your list to see?
All right, so every week, five things. First one, and we talked about this earlier this week. Take the kickoff if they win the toss. Get off to the fast start. They clearly play better with the lead. It goes back and forth on what the trend is in the league based on, you know, who takes the kick, who doesn't. I think for this team, it's imperative to take the kick. They do not play well from behind because they're gutless. Number two, coverage. Strong. Coverage. The Cowboys have two players on their defense whose PFF coverage grades for the year are higher than a 67. Two. And one of them is Micah, who barely gets into coverage anyway. He's got a handful of coverage. That's just awful. If they can't cover, they can't win because they sure as hell can't stop the run.
And if you remember in the offseason, there was a little battle taking place between Malik Nabers, the stud rookie receiver on my fantasy teams, and Trayvon Diggs. And the other day in the locker room, the reporters tried to get Malik to re-spark it.
There's been a lot of back and forth between you and Diggs. You looking forward to this matchup once and for all?
I mean, it is what it is, but I don't want to really talk about it. I mean, it's game time now.
Do you know Diggs?
No, first of all, I don't.
Is that even a ban?
I mean, it is what, like I said, I don't want to talk about it.
So now he doesn't want to touch it.
He doesn't want to talk about it. Huh?
So not adding any more fuel to it. Bobby, if they do get matched up the majority of the game, who wins the matchup?
Probably Nabers, just because Nabers is right now, I mean, he looks like one of the, at the start of the season, he looks like one of the five best receivers in the league right now. And so I would say probably Nabers takes advantage of it.
Can Daniel Jones get him the ball enough?
Right.
That's the question there. I mean, he may not have great numbers, but he may, you know, win the individual matchup and have, you know, and be open a lot. Number three, some semblance of a run defense would be nice. Again, according to PFF, they're three worst graded players from a rush perspective, running the football. We're all defensive tackles. They're three worst graded players from a run-stopping perspective. We're all defensive tackles. That is not good.
And I think the number is nobody runs it at a higher percentage between the tackles in the NFC than the Giants.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
Cowboys, worst, obviously, worst run defense in the NFL right now. Dead last, 185 allowed per game, 273 from Baltimore. So this will be Daniel Jones and Devin Singletary. One additional thing on Neighbors, by the way. He ranks second in the NFL with 23 catches, fifth in receiving yards. No player in the league has more 20-plus yard catches than him.
Ooh.
He has six. Last week, he became the first player in history to have 20-plus catches, 250-plus receiving yards, and three or more touchdown catches in his first three career games.
Oof. It's 59%, by the way. The Giants run the ball between the tackles 59% of the time.
Number four.
I don't know what's worse. Again, every week we ask the same thing.
Yeah.
Is it scarier for teams to run to the perimeter of the Cowboys defense or inside? Probably see all of the above.
Probably will. I wonder how much Daniel Jones is going to keep it.
He has not been running it as much. He has not been running it as much this year. He's averaging just 22 rushing yards per game for his career. He's averaged 34 yards on the ground.
Oof. Number four, don't let him off the hook with field goals. This should be easy. You want to lose this game, though. Be average or worse in the red zone. Right now, the Cowboys are 50-50 in the red zone. They are 50% on the dot so early, so it's not really a good number, necessarily stat to use yet. It's not terrible, but it's mid-pack, but it's got to be better.
And they've had a nightmare kicking situation. Greg Joseph was signed off the Lions practice squad before the Cleveland game. He missed a 48-yarder. He did hit on three extra points. They recently put Graham Gano on injured reserve. Brian Daboll took some heat for mishandling the kicker situation a few weeks ago.
Man, Graham Gano's been around forever.
Yeah.
Whew. And then number five, this is not an on-the-field thing, but there's no pouting, please. At the end of the day,
when Bobby thinks you're showing you want to win.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's just showing
if you pout
emotion.
And you mean it the right way, it's okay right. to pout.
Yeah, when we come in here tomorrow, I'd rather talk about a loss than talk about a player complaining on the sidelines and getting into verbal spats. Win or lose, I don't want to see what we saw last week. It's just tiresome. It's tiresome to talk about. It's tiresome to watch. Please, no pouting.
Not me. Bring the chaos.
Bring the chaos.
Bring the chaos. Bring the ruckus. All right. Bobby, your preview or pick.
So this is, Dallas is a more talented team than the Giants. There's no doubt about it. There are a number of things that the Giants do well, though, that are problematic for the Cowboys. The Giants, if you look at their offense, if I told you an offense is coming in here that likes to run, you know, up the A gap where the Cowboys have had some issues there. You got a team that likes to run up the A gap, has run the ball pretty effectively the last 2 weeks, uses read options, uses the screen game heavily, uses a bunch of different clear out routes and different things to get receivers in space. When you talk about that's what an offense does well, that sounds like the exact stuff that the Cowboys struggle with. And
do they look different with Daboll calling the plays as you feared?
Yeah. No, I don't know. Like, we'll see how much more successful it is. It's different, though. Like the way that they're doing both sides of the ball are completely different. The defensive coordinator they brought in, Shane Bowen, his blitz concepts are wildly different from what Wink Martindale's are. But he'll blitz people from all three different levels of the defense. He'll show stuff and then drop guys back. Sometimes they rush four. Sometimes they'll bring six. But they're very multiple in the way that they bring their blitz packages. The offensive stuff is concerning because I think the Giants offensive line and pass protection has been inconsistent, but there have been several long stretches of these games where they're blocking things up really well and giving Daniel Jones time to throw. But they'll do things with Malik Nabers where they scheme up easy throws for Nabers, even though he's really good. You know, they've had issues with tackling from Kalen Carson, who's probably not playing tonight. But if it's Andrew Booth, who's had trouble tackling his entire career, if you get Nabers on him, those catch and runs we've seen a couple different times with the Cowboys this year where somebody catches a comeback, sheds the tackle, and runs down the field 60 yards, like happened against Baltimore and New Orleans, Nabers has like three of those on his tape this year already.
By the way, their defense up front went off against the Browns. Dexter Lawrence.
It's not ours.
The Giants had 17 pressures and 9 sacks.
Oof.
And Dexter Lawrence had 4 pressures and 2 sacks from the inside.
Yeah.
The Giants' D-line was what we talked about with them heading into the year. They had a strength. So who will those matchups be against? With Thibodeau, Lawrence, Burns,
How's Burns look?
So that Burns looks good. Thibodeau looks good. They move them around a lot. They like look for different kind of matchups. The guy who's got a lot riding on him in this game is going to be Cooper Beebe because of what Dexter Lawrence can do. And Beebe has struggled with some of the twists and the stunts, and they'll run that. And he's struggled at times recognizing blitz pickups. They're going to do a lot of that. This is a troubling matchup just from the perspective of the things that the Giants do well on both sides of the ball are the things the Cowboys haven't done well and the things that the Cowboys have struggled with. I think what this will come down to is, can Dallas slow down the pass rush at all? If they can slow down the pass rush, they can take advantage of the Giants' secondary, they'll score a bunch of points, and they'll win. I don't have confidence that that's going to happen, and so I've got the Giants winning
27-24. Whoa. RJ, you look disgusted. You're shaking your head already.
Hayes just trying to speak McCarthy getting fired into existence.
I promise I'm not. I told you. I texted you.
Never understood it.
But. I texted you the other day. I said I was ready to turn on the tape and say, all right, yeah, they're going to win unless they just screwed up. You see it. The things they do are really difficult things that Dallas has trouble with.
Can you give away Broadus's pick? Did he make his?
He's made it already public. 26-23 Giants.
Whoa! Yeah,
two idiots, no waiting. Not,
all right, clip this, Peyton, for tomorrow morning. Clip Chop's reaction.
Look, the sharps are telling you what's happening. The line's already moved 1.5, 2 points in the Cowboys' favor. Or I guess it would be in the Giants' favor if you want to look at it from the underdog perspective.
By the way, Daniel Jones, I guess, is the new Kirk Cousins' worst primetime record by a starting quarterback since the 70 merger.
Yeah, he's not very good.
Yeah.
He's not a very good player. The Cowboys win 31-21. I need the Giants to score because in daily fantasy, I have Neighbors and Singletary. So I need them to put up some stuff.
They'll both probably score.
I hope so. I hope they do. I hope they do.
They're both used a lot.
Yeah. So, Cowboys with the former Cowboys tight end, James Whalen, chiming in. 31-17 Cowboys, defense scores, and Turpin runs one back.
Yeah.
That's
about
not a great
right.
offensive day then.
Sounds about right. They only win if they get two touchdowns from other places than their offense.
24-17 Cowboys. Again, I've been like not even around the over-unders. The over-under for this is 45. I have 41 points. Cowboys win by 7. Pepe, your pick, and what are the Tolos saying? They nailed it last week with the Ravens selection.
Tolos have their answers in their predictions. 325 says Giants win 17-15. Low-scoring game there. 817, 40-16 Cowboys. 214, 29-16 Cowboys. And the 903 and 817 have 20-17 Giants in overtime.
You seeing it like 50-50 or?
There's a lot of Cowboy on here, and there's Giants sprinkled in. Let's not make no mistake about it. 24-17, Giants win the toss. It's a blowout, 27-9. There's a lot, but then there's also people who have the Cowboys scoring 42.
Yeah, I think honestly, I'm picking the Giants. I think that's what's going to happen. If the Cowboys win, I think the only way the Cowboys win this is if it's a avalanche. They either blow them out or they lose close to the Giants. That's how I look at it.
And look, with this, I'm not overthinking it. You know, when the Cowboys make the playoffs, we always go back to history. The history shows the Cowboys will get bounced in round one, round two, if they're lucky to make it that far. I'm going with history with this NFC East rivalry matchup. And the Giants get their ass whooped by the Cowboys.
Are you okay?
Sorry.
This is not tomorrow morning when you stay up till midnight.
Right.
I already butchered the plain lady charger.
I got the
story.
Cowboys winning by 10 here.
Cowboys winning by 10. Update the plane charger thing.
All right. So, Peyton, the charger lady. So the plane was stuck on the tarmac, which there's rules where if you're stuck on the plane for X amount of time, they'll let you get off the plane. They call it deplaning, whatever. So you get off the plane, then you come back on later when the flight's ready to leave. So the guy left his charger on the plane in his seat knowing he was going to come back to it. Maybe he didn't want to fold it up, roll it back up, put it away. He was like, I'm just going to leave it here. One of the other passengers told him that as they were getting off the plane, this blonde lady saw it, went into his seat, crouched down, and then took the charger. And that's what happened. That it completely changes the story.
She's in the wrong. That's stealing.
Yes, she's just in the wrong now.
Yeah.
He's just leaving things on the airplane. I'm coming back to it anyway. I'm not going to bother packing everything up.
That changes things.
Changes things.
All right. Those are the official selections here on Sean and RJ, 105.3 The Fan. By the way, Micah Parsons was asked if he thought everyone got the message about being professional and following the game plan. He says, this is where Micah is really honest and refreshing. I mean, everyone says it, but then again, we got to see what happens Thursday. How does he think his messaging is being received by teammates? It's hard to tell because everyone's nodding their head like, yeah, we all agree. But at the same time, it's not showing out on the field. As a competitor, at some point, you got to be prideful enough to say, I'm not going to allow this to happen to me. I just feel like some people are just allowing them to keep getting smacked in the face. When are you going to stand up? Has he gone to individual players and talked to them with conversations to elevate their play? Quote, I just feel like I'm not there yet to go to someone because it's hard to just blame one particular person for one thing. I don't think that's right.
That's pretty good. I think that that's an accurate assessment. We said it after the game. When you hear Micah talk after...
Here's the problem with it. Sorry to interrupt. I appreciate what he's trying to do. I heard you on KNC the other day in studio. Well, you know, Micah is trying, but you can't just talk macro like that without approaching the people micro. You know what I mean? The next step in his leadership is feeling comfortable enough to go in the D-line room or the linebacker room or the secondary room and be like, yo, this is just what I'm seeing. Don't go in there and preach to them. This is what I'm seeing. How can we figure this out? Don't just make blanket generic statements to the media. You got to be able to go to the people individually and talk to them. That's leadership.
I remember it was... couple years ago when they had hit a rough patch, and I was just asking somebody about how, like, off the record over by their log, I was just asking, like, how those discussions go and how you represent them. And somebody had told me, they said, in public, it's broad. In private, it's targeted. Like, that's the approach you have to have, is that when you're talking publicly, you talk in broad generalities and say you're doing this. When you get, like, behind closed doors and it's safe in there, you need to tell guys, you need to feel comfortable enough with guys to say, you are not doing what you're supposed to be doing, and you are killing all of us right now because of it, or you're not doing that. And you're like, that's where those really hard conversations come from. I think Mike is 100% being honest, though. Like, I don't think he's just publicly representing it as broad. I think he's telling the truth. He doesn't feel comfortable doing it right now.
Yeah, but as a teammate, it rubs me more the wrong way when it's just a statement made without you, like, coming to me. Like, let's hash it out. Let's talk it out, my opinion.
Yeah, no, like Dak saying post-game, you know, guys need to be more professional.
Yeah.
And then CD coming out on Tuesday and saying, I've got to be more professional.
Yeah.
It's very clear. That publicly, implies... Dak is talking broad. Privately, he's telling CD, you need to be more professional.
Yeah.
And then that's the way that I think they prefer you approach it.
Who's on the TV right now? Not the player, but what team? What team is on the TV?
The Oakland Athletics.
Oakland Athletics. You've seen the movie Moneyball. All the scouts are there just yapping. And then Brad Pitt starts doing the...
Oh, because the bottom TV is the Cowboys smashed by Derrick Henry.
It's true. It is.
Yeah.
But Brad Pitt's sitting there listening to this, and they're all talking about, oh, this guy's great. He's got a hot girlfriend. He's got to be good. And he just does the talk thing, and it's this guy's just talking.
Yep.
You're just talking. And that's what they're doing. I don't care what the hell Micah Parsons has to say about... Oh, we just got to be okay. You're just talking at this point because that's all they do. That's all they do.
The hot noise, baby.
Yeah,
the hot noise.
I asked this Chop and I were
talking. They just don't talk when they're trying to communicate defensively.
Right. Then they yell. They argue. They yell, or they don't say a word.
Yeah. Chop and I talked about this yesterday a little bit while you're out. So I was curious what your thought on it was. Is it more concerning to you that in the last few days the people who are talking in a very serious tone about it are the DeMarcus Lawrences, Dak Prescott's, and Jordan Lewis, who have been here through bad times before? And, like, is that an indicator to you of, like, oh, these guys who have experience dealing with bad locker room situations recognize we are getting really close?
Probably. Probably a little bit more concerning. It feels like this thing, the house of cards, baby, it's starting to teeter. If they lose tonight, buckle up tomorrow.
Yeah.
If they lose tonight, buckle the F up.
We need to take people out of their bubbles and their safe place and make them think about the world we live in.
You are fake news.
So what do you guys hear? What's the scuttlebutt?
It's time for Neighborhood Watch here on 105 Through the Fan. We do it every Thursday at around 7:40 during the expressway. First, a shout out to get out of the way to McKenna Jackson over at Keller High School. The Keller High School softball team, her dad, Rob, has been listening to the morning show for like a decade. He said it's what he puts on. He gets up in the morning, puts it on in the truck while he's driving around. So he listens to the morning show and then he's tuned in for the rest of the day. But the morning show is where he's really locked in. And of course, Keller is the official high school softball team of the station here. But McKenna Jackson committing to the University of Kansas this week. She got a big time scholarship there. So making Ari Temkin proud over there committing to Kansas. All right, our Facebook community group post of the week comes to us from City of Louisville. Not an account run by the City of Louisville, but a discussion about the City of Louisville. And it seems to have come from someone who is not from Texas. At least that's what a lot of the comments say. This caused a lot of...
Scallywags. Is a scallywag or a snowbird?
This caused a big stir here, Chop. They said, that State Fair cowboy statue needs a serious total makeover. There, I said it. That's all they leave it at. And people, you would think just...
Fair cowboy statue?
Big tech.
You would think... that's somebody just being kind of flippant, joking around.
Yeah.
People in those comments did not take that as a joke. It was first of all, his name is Big Tex, okay? And no, he doesn't need a makeover.
No. I thought they were talking about Dallas Cowboys statue out there.
Nope. Somebody says, tell me you're not a Texan without telling me you're not a Texan. State Fair Cowboy, what the actual F? His name is Big Tex. Somebody else says, some of us Texans like things to stay the same, especially when there's no need for improvement. I cannot imagine going to the State Fair with a new and improved Big Tex. There is such a thing as nostalgia. Somebody else said he did have a makeover back in 2012, and then they posted a picture of him on fire.
After Troy burned it down.
Yeah, exactly. So then there was others. Somebody said he looks creepy. So there's a little bit of back and forth, small support for him, but a lot of anger and resentment in there. And so it made me want to ask the question to you guys, with the State Fair getting going, I know you're going to be going out there soon enough, Sean. Are we stuck in our ways at all with Big Tex? Like, are we letting the air pass us by? Should we, are we playing the mid-range jumper game in 2024 with Big Tex?
No, it needs to feel a little old and nostalgic, I believe. It's a fair.
Thank you. It's a fair.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That he looks perfectly perfectly fair.
Look, is he a little bit of is he a little barrel chested? Sure, right? Is his face a little was it done in an? Was his face made in an era where it was a little they didn't have the 3D printers?
Yeah,
sure, but it's still everybody. What's the first thing you take a picture next to?
Yeah. Well, is that the first thing you do when you walk in?
It's first thing kids want to do when we walk in.
You go and you wait for your gap. To get the pose.
Get the pose. Yeah. So
we get the corn dog and the picture.
Yeah. I mean, if they changed it, I wouldn't freak out if they changed it, but it doesn't need fixing.
See, that is the thing. I think if you do.
Where did this pose come from? Who made this post?
City of Louisville. It was in the City of Louisville. And that's the thing. It was posted by somebody, and then everybody in the comments was accusing this person of you're a transplant. There's no way you're actually from here.
Right.
Because no one would call for this or claim for this. I think if you change Big Tex and give him a modern look, it's going to be similar to, you remember a couple years ago when the Sonic movie came out and they gave it a modern Sonic look and he looked like realistic. And then they had to go back in and CGI the old Sonic back in there because they're like, oh my gosh, this movie's going to flop if we come out and do this. Same thing with State Fair. I think you'd see a lot of people very upset. All right. The Fort Worth superintendent has resigned. The Fort Worth ISD superintendent has resigned under pressure from the city and education leaders following poor STAR testing results in the district. They lagged behind Dallas DISD a little bit in some of the STAR testing stuff. So after hours of sitting here and fighting about it and having trouble coming to an agreement, Dr. Angelica Ramsey went ahead and submitted her voluntary resignation. But this brings a bigger point out, which is the STAR testing stuff again.
So she has to go because these kids are dumb.
So that's that's again what we're looking at here.
I'm joking. I don't know what goes into it. So, the prep and how much she should be held accountable.
Because
the grades aren't high enough.
Yeah. Go ahead. Finish.
Yeah. There are a lot of teachers who despise the STAR testing model. I mean, they're graded and judged off the results, obviously, but they think it puts a ton of pressure on the students. it puts a ton of pressure on the teachers to prioritize that test and that they neglect other stuff because they're trying to coach to that test.
That's the issue.
And they feel like it manifests a lot of unhealthy stress, poor performance that kids get. My kids get sick every day.
And what is it to determine?
It's aptitude. So we all had
what?
A standardized test in school. It was before the SAT, you had whether it was like the California Achievement Test, the CAT test. We had that. Some people have other ones. Every state has this. Something like this. Not necessarily a star. But my mom was a teacher. My ex-wife's a teacher. Well, and like all they do now, because that's all they're graded on. They're not graded on advancement. They're not graded on like grades. They're just graded, and the schools get funding just off their star test grades or whatever. And if you're lagging, then
but if I do well on the star test, that gets me what as a student?
Nothing.
If you do poorly, it's a problem.
Yeah.
If you do poorly, you're going to have to, in some instances, we haven't had to deal with it. So I believe you get held back in some instances. I know other kids, it's just the following school year, it's you need extra tutoring or you need extra classes, but they will mandate certain stuff based on that. But
the teachers are now teaching just to pass the test instead of teaching like everything. So you're creating a class of nitwits because they don't know half the stuff that they're supposed to learn. And that's a problem.
Yeah, a lot of people feel like you're coaching to a test. You're not actually teaching them. And that can be a problem. I know every year we get an email from the district like the week before star test. And this is how much emphasis they put on it. And they give you like a rundown of the way you should prepare your child that morning. Like use calming energy. Make sure they eat a good breakfast. Like they give you all these different tips for like make sure they're ready to go sit down and take this test for like 4 hours. So causes a lot of issues, and now it's left Fort Worth ISD without a superintendent. Okay, this is an insane figure I saw yesterday over at Fox 4. The amount of money it takes to be considered middle class in various cities across the country, and two North Texas cities ended up near the top of the list. University Park and South Lake. I'm curious, this is a scale. So the very minimum it takes to be considered middle class, and then the highest tier it takes where you could still have this much money and it's still not considered upper class.
So South Lake, for example, are you saying the middle income of all the people of South Lake? Like that's the middle number.
Yeah, like this is the range where you're considered middle class if you live in South Lake, for instance, which was 12th in rankings. Where do you think this area was?
80K.
Chop.
DFW as a whole?
South Lake.
South Lake. Oh, 221,000.
For the middle?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're both wrong. You could make $720,000 and be considered middle class in South Lake. The range is, on the low end, it's $240,000, and then on the high end, it's $720,000. And University Park is actually even worse, it looks like. University Park is a little bit higher. They're $254,000 for the bottom of it. The high end is $762,000. But
that's where my dad got his ego checked when he came here, and he's like, I want to look at some real estate and invest in Dallas, and I want to look at Highland Park, Preston Hollow, and University Park. And he came home with his tail between his legs. A dollar don't go the same way here as it does in Maryland, Dad.
The number one city with the wealthiest middle class is Hillsborough, California, where you could make $1,079,900 and be considered the middle class in that community. Number two on this list, though, is from your neck of the woods, Chop. Well, not like your city, but your old state, New Jersey. What New Jersey city do you think it would have been?
Montclair, Bergen,
Cowboys,
Holmdel.
Cowboys are
Alpine.
Cowboys, I think, are roughly in this area right now. Short Hills. Short Hills, New Jersey. It's
right, used to get by Jordans.
$963,000 in Short Hills, New Jersey is still middle class. But there you go. University Park and South Lake, both really expensive. Really quickly, I got time for one more. The Wisconsin Department of Justice and SWAT were hanging out in Little Elm this week. So the Wisconsin Department of Justice is investigating a multi-state crime ring, a theft ring right now, with goods being trafficked and different things like that. And they ended out reaching out to North Texas authorities and getting them involved and saying, hey, we've kind of tracked somebody that is working within this network that lives there in Little Elm, Texas. Would you guys be able to give us a hand here? So Little Elm authorities helped out. SWAT showed up at this house, raided it. They're not telling anybody what the goods are or what the issues are. But what was fascinating about this is from NBC5. They asked a couple different experts about, hey, this story's out here. What kind of stuff might they be talking about? And so they're listing the different things that it could be. But they said North Texas is actually going to be a hotbed for this kind of issue moving forward, because population growth and cost of living and different things like that, those factors of it, with the advancements in AI and the ability to communicate between different networks, that North Texas is going to be a spot that's going to have a lot of these issues.
A guy that we really liked last year in previewing Cowboys Giants, Paul Schwartz from the New York Post, joins us after we hook you up and say thanks for turning it on, leaving it on.